This is the Citadel Cafe. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 3, recorded Wednesday, January 11th, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossOnline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how's it going?
I am doing very well. I've had a bit of a rough week, but we'll get to that later, I guess.
Okay. To my other right is Mr. Chad Merlin, and the only thing that you need to know about Chad is that you don't need to know anything about Chad outside of how he's doing this evening.
Tired.
Everybody's tired.
Yes,
everybody's
very tired.
If you're new to our show, the Citadel Cafe is where the three of us kind of hang out, talk about geeky stuff that we are into. It ranges across the board. It could be sci-fi, it could be fantasy, it could be tech news, it could be books, could be anything. So if you're new, then that's what we do. And if you're not new, then welcome back. We do have some listeners. I've received some feedback on the Frog Pants chat room as well as Twitter. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We're having a lot of fun with this. We hope you are, too. So, guys, why are you so tired?
Well, for me, I've had a pretty rough week. My son is, once again, sick. In the wonderful world of daycare, he'll catch every bug that's going around. So everything's going well. And then, you know, the vomit comet shows up again, and it's all good. So we spent a couple nights ago. We were in the hospital till about 3 in the morning getting his ears checked out. And then our daycare fell through. So yesterday I was on deck with him and getting some stuff and on the contract finished up there and that. And then beyond that, last week we actually had a break and enter on our tenants unit next door when they were gone on vacation. So So anyway, that was fun dealing with that for part of the week. And, you know, all of that entailed, you know, changing the locks and et cetera, cleaning it up and dealing with the police and the CSI type people coming by with a little fingerprint dusting kits, which I thought was pretty cool. They actually do that for a home invasion, but anyway.
Wow. But,
yeah. So that's that. And it was interesting. I had this for a later thing, but yeah, I know with you, Joel, you use a lot of social media to indicate where you are. Like Yelp or Foursquare or something?
I use Foursquare. I generally only check into places that are... I don't know if I would use it if I was on vacation. Mm. But I would... I check in on Foursquare because there are some deals I get at Starbucks. And I kind of like starting around knowing that I'm the mayor of the Halifax Public Gardens. it's different for me because in Halifax, there's not a huge user base. So, I mean, like, if you check into a place 4 times, even if you live on the other side of the town, you're kind of the mayor of that place. So it's just kind of a way to connect with people. I have actually found, like, some people have found the comic through Foursquare. It's just another social avenue. We've discussed actually Foursquare on the Dating Digital podcast before in terms of safety and, you know, single women checking into places, that kind of thing. And a lot
makes
of...
makes it easier for their stalkers.
Well, see, and this is the problem, right?
With patterns on that, for sure.
Yeah, you know, and it becomes a... it could become an issue if you were a public figure or a celebrity. So a lot of the tips that are out there are, you know, you can still get all the benefits of checking in on Foursquare if you check in when you're leaving. Right. So I could be on my way home from Starbucks, you know, which will take me 30 minutes to get to my place or maybe less. So, you know, if I check in at Starbucks and you think you're going to rob me, well, you might find, you know, that I come home before you expect. Yeah. So there is that kind of thing out there. The other thing with me is that I live in an apartment building. So yeah. I do have that secure door downstairs that does make checking into Foursquare a little bit more acceptable, I guess, in terms of my risk assessment.
Yeah, the thing that gets me is like our tenants unit essentially is almost like a duplex. So they broke in and we were home. We didn't hear them. It was a couple of kids, we're pretty sure, and they hit another spot with an elderly couple, and they did a lot of damage at their place, a lot more than they did at the tenants unit. But like,
oh, that sucks.
The key to TV and, you know, stole a bunch of electronics and some booze and some other things and stuff like that, right? But they made a pretty good haul of it all. But I guess one of her kids, they were on vacation, and he put, you know, having a great time on vacation in Florida. And then when they get home, you know, la-ti-da.
Yeah.
You know. So you know, on Facebook, I guess they have a, you know, the kids are friends with everybody on Facebook, and you know, most times their files and profiles are all open, and they don't know who is looking at their online profiles. So word to the wise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chad, do you remember when I was broken into on Anderson Street when we were teenagers?
Wow, that was a long time ago. Didn't your mother install a security system right after that?
Right after that, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that my dad thought was the case was because we were on vacation and both myself and my sister were both teenagers. You know, you're pretty social. You're telling your friends about what you're doing, where you're going. Mm-hmm. I had some issues with some people at school, and my father felt that it was some of those people that either broke in themselves or informed some other people that were able to break in and then got a cut.
Yeah.
Because it would have been junior high.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go into naming any names, but you know, Chad, you'll remember the kind of issues that I had in junior high. So those kind of things, like, you know, you have to be careful when you're broadcasting, when you're going to be out of the city, even if it's not, because that was long before social media existed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I once read online or heard around online something about there are some insurance companies maybe in the States that won't cover you if you say you're going on vacation on Twitter and you get robbed.
Hey, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I never thought about the insurance and stuff like that, all the implications that might.
And anyway, you know, we like security and all ramped up, or, you know, motion lights and all that stuff's being installed. So it won't be an issue in the future. And the thing is, like for the new year, one of my resolutions is not to work so late, to actually go to bed at a decent time. Mm-hmm. And if I was actually up like my normal hours of working, I probably would have heard them. And on the way past my office, you know, I do have a work room there with some nice tools. So
yeah, well,
you know, a crowbar would help deter a 16-year-old, right?
I don't even know if you'd need a crowbar, dude.
Yeah.
My father built basically a garden swing. A-frames on either end with the big beam in the top and then the chains holding the large swing, right? And he put it right out front, and ended up a neighbor bought it. But he put it out on the front yard with a big sign on it saying, you know, for sale. And you could tell that it was made, you know, right there. And it wasn't like painted or anything like that, just the raw wood and stuff. And anyways, he was broken into like a week later. And the cop inquired and, you know, came out that, you know, they put that swing out front. And the cop said, that's just like telling them you got tools, you know. So, and that's what happened. They broke into the garage and, you know, stole all his tools and stuff, right? So it was pretty sad. But,
that's too bad.
And it's scary, too, because it invades your privacy. Even if you're not there or whatever, it makes you think. And if you're not safe in your own home, well, man, oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did make it hard to sleep for a little while when we were broken into as teenagers, because that was my first experience with any kind of crime happening to me, to my family. And it did make you kind of feel a little bit strange, especially when you're like, I would have been about 13 or 14, maybe 15, still in junior high. So the other thing was, of course, you're old enough to be home alone. You know, mm-hmm. later on in the year, and then some screwball decides to, you know, spend his Friday night throwing snowballs at your back window, and I mean, it scares the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you're just like, oh, someone's throwing snowballs at my back window. But when you've got the mindset of, we've been broken into before, I'm sitting alone in my basement watching TV, it's the only thing on in the entire house, because I mean, like, whatever, you're just, you know, you're a teenager, you don't care.
Yeah.
And then banging and noises start happening at the French doors upstairs, and you're like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah,
now I have to go see what that is. Shit.
Yeah.
You know, like not a good feeling at all. But now that we've started off the new year on a huge downer.
Sorry about that, guys. That's just a chat. Why are you tired?
Jeez. Yeah. Chad, why are you so tired? Keep the downer going. Let's see how far we can dig the hole.
Well, on a positive note, with my job, I started doing a new course basically for advancement, and ended up, it's a very physical job, and it just, you know, tired, you know, you start off, you're out of shape because you still got the old carrying the Christmas weight, you know, so extra couple pounds on me, that's for sure. And so, you know, out of shape, starting a new course that is a little bit physical, so had to do that. And then at the same time, you know, the whole resolution of, well, I'm carrying Christmas weight and I'm losing it, I'm going to the gym. So I started on Monday. I started on Monday went to the gym after work, and then went today again, and I am zonked.
Wow.
Zonked, yeah.
You have an incentive to actually get in better shape, though. You'll be paid to get in better shape. That's pretty neat. You get paid for your resolution. That's kind
of
nice.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, somewhat, for sure, for sure. So, yeah, but I'm pretty beat. But, like, I mean, I tend to think of myself as a person that likes to maintain a certain physical level, right? Like, I'm not saying I'm in top condition by any stretch, but I can jump off the coach and go do three to 5K run without doing anything. Well, I just ran 5K without doing anything for a month and a half. So, you know, I guess that counts for something, right? So with that said, I really didn't want to push too hard, but man, oh man, I didn't see this coming at all.
I know. I think your first step was, you know, jumping off the couch was a mistake. But anyway.
Yeah, that's quite myself or something stupid. Yeah. Like that. Yeah.
Well, aren't those called up downs? You know, it's like, oh, I'm on the couch. I'm standing up. I'm on the couch. I'm standing up. You know, you do that a few times. That's a good workout. Then you have to rest. You know, and conveniently, the couch is right there. well, I mean, to kind of segue into some geeky things, we're all exhausted. I've been working really hard as well. I've been putting in a lot of hours, just catching up on the vacation that I took.
You didn't really do a lot as opposed to like what illustration over the holidays, did you?
I didn't do anything. No, I took 2.5 weeks off. Which is unusual. Normally, I only take about a week, which is usually between Christmas Eve and New Year's Day. That's usually the week that I get off. But I took extra time off this time around because you guys were in town. I mean, like I had Jocelyn was in town. You guys were in town, you and Julie, and then Peyton and Lee, you guys also took some time off. So we all get to hang out together, which was really, really cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that I find about this new podcast in the new year is that you guys both sound a lot better. Did something change?
Yeah. Yeah. The Boxing Day Santa showed up, which was awesome. Yeah. I got a wonderful new Yeti mic from one of the big box stores, and it was on sale on Boxing Week from $159 down to $79. So
wicked.
That's a no brainer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, precisely. And on top of being a great podcasting mic, as I mentioned to you when you mentioned the sale, like you can do audio for your animations and stuff with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody else listening, I actually have the same mic. I've had it for about a year. It's from Blue Audio, and they're fantastic USB directional mics. So they're able to cut down some of the ambient noise in the room make the audio a lot crisper. And because they have a USB connection, it's super easy. You can use them with any computer. So I've been using mine and I love it. Now that Peyton has his, you'll enjoy a higher quality of audio on the show. But also, Chad, you got a new mic.
I got a new mic / headset. Yes, I couldn't quite justify the Yeti, but as much as beautiful as the machine is and as great as you guys sound, like silky smooth, berry white, you know, come on.
Strangers in the night.
Sing it to me, boys. Was that Barry White? I don't think
so. Okay. So Sinatra beats Barry White anyway.
Okay. maybe our listeners can tell us who beats Barry White. Or Frank Sinatra. If we're into that, no. So, anyways, I dug into my. I got a few gift cards for Christmas, and had some Future Shop gift cards lying around. So I just invested in a Logitech headset, the 5500, I believe it is. Just a USB plug-in headset, you know. So, like Joel and I talked about earlier, like I'm calling in airstrikes or. Ion cannon fire control, you know, something like that. Standby ion control fire.
Nice. Well, I mean, it sounds fine. I mean, and ultimately these days, I mean, for headsets and gaming and stuff like that, tech technology is there. And LG is always Logitech, you said.
Yes.
Yeah, Logitech. So, I mean, they're a good company. I always have their mice and their webcams when I was on a PC. That was always the peripheral stuff that I preferred was Logitech. So, but it all sounds fantastic. So it'll be a lot easier on me on the editing side of things to get the show out there. So what have you guys been doing over the holidays? I mean, I know we spent some time together. Like we all went to go see the Muppets,
woohoo!
Which was hilarious. And I really enjoyed it. We all talked about it a little bit after after the show, but I guess we can give the listeners our rating. How many stars do you guys think?
I give it 5. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Nice.
It was a really nice way of bridging where the franchise was and where they want to take it. And, you know, it was a good way of trying to do it and bringing it back to life. And, you know, the Jason, the writer and all that, he did a fantastic job. And, you know, a couple points, you know, some of the actors weren't, you can tell they weren't 100% committed just to certain scenes, but, you know, it did hold up, I think. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I almost cried a couple times, too, you know.
Me too, man. Me too.
Yeah.
There was some moving moments for sure.
Yeah. And because you know, you thought about the first time you watched the show, or, well, when you remembered watching the show, you know, the little things, and they brought it back, and it's nostalgia, right? And in a time and age when nostalgia is really leaving us, like, ultimately, yeah, with Netflix and with the internet and YouTube and music on demand, everything on demand whenever you want it, and you just, oh, I feel like listening to this song or watching this movie right now, you know, it takes away from those moments where you feel like, hey, do you remember that movie? You know, that was awesome. Yeah, I know. And then you download it and you watch it, and then you go, yeah, wow, that sucked, and how, yeah, did I ever like that movie? And then you lose that feeling with it for, oh, just kicks you right in the nuts.
Yeah, you know, like, so the A-Team movie, for example. Well, the A-Team TV show, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so that was fun. I'd give it a really high rating, too. I mean, 5 out of 5 for sure. For a Muppets movie, if you're going to see Muppets, 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm a little bit on the shy side of that. I think I give it a 4. I enjoyed it. It was funny. I would recommend everybody see it. But
was it the company?
No. No, it was not. It was not the company. Yeah, I was sitting far enough away from Chad that it wasn't an issue.
Well, if it wasn't me, and if it wasn't Peyton, who else was it?
Yeah, well, you know, you guys both had your wives there. I mean, I could just blame them. Okay. No, it was
keep dodging it. Carry on.
Sorry. Yeah, it I don't know. I think it was the lack of villain. I didn't really feel like the bad guy was that bad. I didn't find the maniacal laugh gag that funny. I felt like the people that were with him, like the Muppets, like he had no Muppet weight. Like, he had the Phantom of the Muppet Theater and a bear that I can't remember the name of. Mm-hmm. Like, he needed somebody, you know, on his side that was like a bad Muppet. Like, if he had Sweetums, or if he had like some other
big Muppet. One of the guys with Dark Crystal or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they're technically not Muppets, I guess.
I know.
But yeah. But I know what you mean. Like, he needed kind of like a well-known, even Stantler and Waldorf would have been cool, which is kind of, they started off with selling the Muppet Theater to him, but that was it. Like, that was the only thing that they were part of.
That was the line they were prepared to cross, kind of thing.
Yeah. that was really it. So that to me wasn't that great.
That scene with him was more like Brewster's Millions with Richard Pryor, you know, with the lawyers, and they got 30 days to do whatever. So
yeah, exactly. Anyway. And that's the thing. It was a recycled plot. I mean, oh, there's oil under the Muppet Theater. Really? You're going to drill in the middle of Hollywood? Like, I just, yeah, it just didn't make any sense. And I understand. Like,
that's
I understand
that the Muppets were real, too, in the movie. So, well, everybody accepted Muppets as real. So.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that I'm complaining about a Muppet movie. You know, this coming from a cartoonist. Like, I mean, I get it. I know that I'm splitting hairs here. But like you said, Peyton, I felt like some of the acting was really, really bad. The acting on the Muppets was great.
Yeah.
The one comment I think all of us had, all 6 of us after the movie, felt like it either was going gangbusters and it was fun and it was funny and you were laughing to the point where you were almost crying, and then Kermit would start talking and it was the saddest, dullest, most, I'm so sad that all my Muppet friends have moved on and I miss Piggy, and he misses Piggy the whole damn movie, and she's in it for half of it and he still misses her. And it's just like, I kind of felt like they needed to, I understood that it needed to be like that when you first saw Kermit. Like, I get it. But after the second act, you know, it should have been just all ramp, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like they kept on pulling you down when it should be this constant upflow. And so that was a problem for me. But like I said, 4 out of 5 stars. I would not miss it.
I'm sticking with my 5.
Yes, yeah, sticking with my 5. Okay. And Muppets the dismount.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Well, while we're on movies, earlier this week, maybe even just yesterday. I don't know. This whole week has been a blur.
Two days ago.
I noticed a small sale on Amazon, care of my friend Jeff MacArthur. And I bought the Lord of the Rings Blu-ray Extended Edition on Amazon for $45.
Canadian.
Yeah. Sold. It is on its way. I got the email yesterday saying that the shipment has been sent to me and should be arriving forthwith.
Me too.
You got it too?
I did.
Nice.
So very now cool. I've officially purchased three versions of that bloody series.
Nice.
You, Joel, do you remember when the first ones came out on DVD?
Yes.
And then I went out and bought them?
Yes.
And then, so everybody, our listeners, little story, you know. And if you don't know me, I'm known for my stories. I set the scene. We've watched the Fellowship of the Ring had been released in theaters, and we had gone and seen it and loved it, and wow, it was great. And then the DVD was released, and right away, what does Chad go out and purchase? But the Fellowship of the Ring on DVD. And so Chad invites Joel over to watch said film, and we watch the film. And as the movie is ending, or even beginning for that matter, Joel Duggan decides to leaf through the massive booklet that comes with the DVD. And in there, amongst the Burger King coupons for Whoppers and other things I can't remember, Joel goes, "Hey, wow, cool. Extended version DVD coming out in 3 months from now." Oh, well, I know what I'm going to buy and not buy. Haha, Chad, you sucker. Oh, man. It felt like a puppy getting his nose rubbed in pee or something after that.
I do remember that. That's yeah, funny. Yeah. And that was a long time ago. I mean,
it was a long time ago.
Those movies were, well, the first one came out in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And the DVD, I guess, would have been released probably somewhere around April 2002. Or was it later in the summer?
It couldn't have been too. If it was in that summer, yeah. Yes, it was. Would have been that summer.
Yeah, because
I was around that whole summer.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Because I can tell you that the extended editions, the ones that look like the books,
mm-hmm.
those were all Christmas releases. So they came out in like October or November, just before Christmas, because they were big Christmas items for people.
Yes.
So
they all came with the bookends and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually ended up getting one of those each year. Like they just came out the following year, each time the movie came out. And I had those for Christmas gifts for like 3 years post-hand. So I actually just watched The Fellowship on DVD here while Jocelyn was down.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, we watched that. It was really fun because I don't think she had ever seen it on home video on a big screen. She saw it in the theaters, but then she's only had it on like a 21-inch tube or something like that at her place.
I can't Excellent. Remember how many times my wife and I have watched those films. We used to live at a university as part of my wife's job, so housing was part of her contract, but they wouldn't provide cable because it was within a university dorm, which made no sense. Oh, anyway, geez. So we didn't have cable, so we watched Lord of the Rings like, you know, once a week. Like, just we would pick through it here and there, right? So it was like better than cable, basically. We watched that all the time. So yeah,
Well, it's long enough. I mean, geez, yeah. For one disc, which is one half of one movie, is like an hour and a half at mm-hmm. the first installation, and then by the time you get to the Return of the King, one disc is like 2 hours.
Yeah. And this is, Joel, this comes back, what I'm about to say next, it goes back to what you were doing with your Star Wars Blu-ray that, you know, my wife isn't really, you know, to lack of a better word, geeky. She was never into the sci-fi thing, you know, growing up. Her older brother is, and I always tease him and her for that matter that he never exposed her enough to that stuff, right? So. So we watched, I had the opportunity to relive watching those movies for the first time with my wife now, you know, watching them. And she's like, I don't know if I'm really into that. And I said, well, give it a shot. And, you know, when can we watch the next one? And there's no more better compliment than hearing something like that. You know, like,
yeah.
when's the next one, or when can we watch the next one? And that's the same with us with the Star Wars saga. But I warned her about the first two. I said, be prepared.
Yeah.
you know, but after that, you know, it was good. So it's fun. Yeah. Cool.
Has she seen the Lord of the Rings as well?
Yes. She's watched all three of them. Yep. You know, big time. And she got really, really into them. And I can honestly say that we can probably watch them again and she'll be excited to watch them again. So,
I'm excited to see what they look like on Blu-ray. Cause I mean, I think you and I both have the same Blu-ray player.
Yes.
And the same TV. So the only thing that's different on your system, I think, is you've got a newer amp.
Yeah, my amp is because I have this. We have the Sony system. It's Bravia Sync, and with the one HDMI cable from the TV to the amp, and then from the Blu-ray player to the amp. So in essence, my TV remote controls the whole system. All I have to do is open my Blu-ray player. Like everything is off. I open the Blu-ray player, place the Blu-ray in, close it, and I sit on my couch, and it does everything for me.
Yeah.
It optimizes it to my settings that are pre-programmed in. It's so easy.
Yeah, I can still control my amp with my TV remote. The only thing is that I can't switch channels with it. So, but I mean, I have to get up to put the disc in anyway, and there's a button on the front of the amp that changes channels. So, I mean, it's... I have a two-step process. I put the disc in, and then I change the amp from TV to Blu-ray, and then I sit on my couch, and then everything else is fine. The other thing is I don't actually have full digital audio. I have digital audio. It's not going through an HDMI cable. I have my audio going through an optical cable. Mm-hmm. So I still get pretty high-quality surround sound, but it's not not quite as new and fancy as yours.
It's not that fancy.
No, but I'm looking forward to see what they look like on Blu-ray because, I mean, the DVD does the Blu-ray player does a good job of upscaling the DVDs, and it looks pretty good. I'm not really concerned, but, I mean, on one hand, you're like, well, they have kind of a film look to them when they're upscaled. Like, they're not hyper-real. Movies like Batman that look hyper-real are really cool, but I don't know. Like, Lord of the Rings, I don't know if it's going to... Well, one, all the visual effects are 10 years old. I don't know if it's going to be... If it's going to take me out of the Lord of the Rings, or if it's going to be just even that much better. Like, I'm sure I'm going to like it. I don't know if it's something I'm going to notice right away or not.
I'm sure they would do any sort of color correction or anything like that would help to...
Yeah. You know, I'm sure.
And all that. You won't notice it as much.
No. Well, and I mean, it's taken this long. I mean, Blu-ray has been dominant for years. So, I mean, the fact that The Lord of the Rings has taken this long to come back out on Blu-ray, it's probably because they had a lot of work to do to make sure it didn't look like crap. So, I mean, I trust the guys at Weta Workshop and Peter Jackson's company. And what is it called? Wingnut? I can't remember the name of it.
Yes,
Wingnut. Is it? Okay, cool. I got that right. Yay.
And Weta. Yeah, and you said... Was it Weta?
Weta Workshop. That's the effects shop. But and I know that because there's a lot of digital people out there that are doing like CG work online. I know that they work at Weta, but that's just kind of an industry thing. I was trying to remember his actual production company. So, but one of the other things that I've been watching this week, especially, is the twit.tv coverage of the CES Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And I've been catching a lot of really cool stuff. I mean, talking about home theaters, I watched Leo Laporte, and I can't remember his podcasting partner's name, on the Home Theater Geek show. They did a live show today. It was a special two-hour walk-around on the show floor at CES. And they're talking about, like, 4K TVs and app-enabled TVs from LG. And there's all this 3D technology that's still bumming around. And there was an 8K television, which is just insane. So to break it down for anybody that's not aware, standard HD right now, Blu-ray, is 1080p. So it's 1080 pixels high. 4K is twice that. So it's like taking four of your televisions, you know, in a grid and jamming them into the same space. 8K is what it sounds like. It's 8K. And they had, I mean, you couldn't see on the video because, of course, you're looking at an 8K television through an internet stream. So, I mean, like, you can't see anything. But Leo and the other guy were saying, like, this is insane. Like, they're showing pictures of stuff. And there was a girl standing with her family, and she had a digital watch on. And it was like a regular family portrait. And Leo was like, I can read her digital watch. You know, and the photographer is maybe 20 feet away. Like, it's really, really neat to see where this stuff is coming. I mean, that the 8K thing was like a, hey, look what we can do prototype. Even the 4K TVs are like $8,000 or more.
What was LEDs?
No, OLED.
Oh, organic.
Was the big thing. And that was the other thing that was really cool. There is a 55-inch LG OLED television. It is 4 millimeters thick.
Yep.
So thinner than the iPhone. And all the guts are in the base of it. And what's funny about that is that your HDMI cables are thicker than the television.
Yeah.
So you have to plug them into the base, or you have to mount it to a wall and then run every cable through a hole in the wall. Like, you can't just run cables from it because it would look ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the cameraman was having trouble getting a shot of it from the side because it disappeared.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was like that it was Transformers 2. It's like there was that Ravage character that they really screwed up on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it had this little waif of a Transformer that was in the military base and that disappeared when it turned sideways. Same idea. I mean, it was really, really thin. But the cool thing about the OLED displays, it's how they function. It's the way that they light up and change colors. So instead of having pixels, which are backlit on an LED screen or an LCD screen, OLEDs are lit something. I can't remember the acronym. Look it up.
Sony released those. There was a 26 inch, I want to say, when we were researching our Z models.
Mm-hmm.
There, they had on their website the OLED 26 inch monitors. I guess they were selling them, and that was in 2009. But they were retardedly expensive, like unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's an OLED screen that was when it was first released, it was 13 inches or 20 inches or something like that, and it was like $12,000. It wasn't from Sony; it was somebody else.
Okay,
but Sony discontinued them because they were just there's no market value. Like, you can't sell somebody, not when LCD TVs are marching off the shelves for $500 at Best Buy on Boxing Day, right?
Yeah.
But the cool thing about the way that the OLED things work is that they're individual lights. Each pixel is actually its own light. So the contrast ratio is infinite because when there's a black, it's off.
Yeah.
It's not lit black, it's off. So you get no light from it. So your blacks are true. And the guys that were watching it there, Leo and his co-host, were saying how obviously no one can see from home, but it was really, there really was a big difference. Now, obviously, I mean, the problem with a 4K TV is one right now is crazy expensive. And OLEDs are also expensive. So it's going to be a few years before they hit the market. Also, there's no 4K content.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that's 4K is Hollywood that are scanning film at 4K because they can. But there's, like, you can't, I mean, you can barely get 720 on, you know, for watching high def hockey or, you know, whatever. You can't even get 1080p broadcast in most places. It's not that
3D movies.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Well, that was the other push between or behind 4K TVs. When you're dealing with passive glasses, which are the cheaper glasses for 3D home theaters, they split the resolution. So when you're looking at a 1080p 3D movie, you're getting half the resolution in one eye and half the resolution in the other eye, and then they combine to make the 3D image. So you're only watching like 720p 3D movies,
yeah.
Right? But with a 4K TV, they can deliver 1080p to each eye.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's why there's this big push. All the professionals that were there, I mean, they still think that 3D at home theater is dead on arrival. If you want to experience 3D, go to IMAX. Like,
yeah,
that's the place for it. It's awesome there. I actually enjoy it there. They give you the great big glasses. You know, like, it makes more sense in an IMAX theater. But home theater 3D stuff is just, it's not really my bag. Because Peyton, you guys don't even have a Blu-ray player yet, do you?
No Blu-ray player. We just have a little 720 TV, and that's pretty much fine what we use it for. You know,
yeah.
Just, you know, the odd bit of Netflix here and there, the odd cartoon for the boy.
Yeah.
But we don't spend a whole lot of time in front of the TV anymore. And the idea of getting an upgrade to a larger TV, you know, down the road maybe, but we're not in a big hurry, especially, you know, like, as you guys talk about here now, how technology is changing so much. You know, you got your 3D TVs, you got the ones that are with glasses, without glasses, and all that stuff. And I'm not quite sure if the, with regards to the 3D, if the ones without the glasses, like, you know, built into the screen itself, if that's going to be a better way of going, because I guess part of the problems from what I've been seeing with regards to 3D television is the focal length of your eyes. because your eyes, not focal length, the convergence point of where your two eyes are looking is always the same. One or the other is the same, the focal length or the convergence point. Anyway, that's why you get headaches if you look at 3D too long, because you're looking through the TV, but your eye is still only at the one point, so it's kind of messing with your head. Hmm. Anyway, I don't know if I'm really into the entire home 3D system, but...
Well, I mean...
I won't be getting it anytime soon.
Well, and that's the thing, like, when you guys decide to update your TVs to whatever it happens to be, 3D is going to be on it. You don't have to use it, but it's to be there.
Yeah.
The thing, the only advantage that it gives you is that in order to accomplish 3D, they have to put a faster processor in the TV, which, if you're just watching a regular 2D image, well, hey, that benefits you. I mean, the faster the TV, the better, right? So, I mean, that's, I know that was one of the big dominant thing at CES seems to be like the big TV push, which is, I guess, always a thing right there. But one of the other things I caught, which I thought was really cool, was I won't talk too long on this, but it was the MakerBot interview on Triangulation on Twit. And Triangulation is a show that Leo Laporte and Tom Merritt do. And they just basically interview really smart, innovative people. It's their excuse to talk to these people and get a chance to hang out with them. And they interviewed... Bree Pettis, and he is one of the co-founders of MakerBot, and they're 3D printers. They just released their new replicator, which is a size of a desktop printer, a little bit higher. You know, it's got a little bit larger volume, but it will do 3D printing on something, Peyton, probably about the size of the Yeti.
Okay.
Not quite as tall, but about the same kind of mass.
Yeah, they were saying it's almost like the same size as a loaf of bread they can print.
Yes, that was the tagline he used. Yeah. It was about the same size as a loaf of bread. He had a companion cube from Portal as an example, and it was about the size of a softball, and he could hand it to Tom with two hands. You know,
and it was made with corn.
Yes.
Yeah, it was corn, plastic. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two things. There's ABS plastic, which is the same thing that Lego is made out of.
Yeah.
And then this corn plastic byproduct thing, which is biodegradable, not water soluble, but biodegradable. And that's just kind of like an off-white, semi-transparent sort of thing.
Yeah, and they're using the 3D printer. I doubt they're using the MakerBot. They're probably using one of the higher grade products or the higher price point products for films like Coraline that through Leica Studios over in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they would make all the... again, back to the animation, where most of my tech will come from anyway, but they would make all the mouth positions and all the facial expressions for, like, you know, Coraline and all that within the computer on a program like Maya, and then they would print them out digitally, so you would have your replacement mouths all done with the 3D computer, as opposed to trying to sculpt them all traditionally. And then you would have variances with your thumbprints or, you know, mold shrinking and stuff like that. This way, you're guaranteed that if you have four different sets of a character or eight different sets of the same character, every mouth position for that open mouth would be the exact same in all dimensions, so that you wouldn't have any real variances in, you know, one puppet looking a little different than the other puppet.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's pretty neat how they're, you know, integrating technology into, you know, the old and the new.
Yeah. But. Well, what I can't believe is the price point.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What are they going for?
The new one, the big one that prints the loaf of bread, the replicator, it's $17.49 for one nozzle and $19.99 for two nozzles. So it's a better part of $2,000.
It's cheaper than HDTV.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have a 3D TV or you have a 3D printer.
Yeah, exactly. You could have a lot of fun with that. And the cool thing is that they take their software and their hardware and they open source it as soon as it hits the market. So they keep it under wraps until they have it prototyped and on the market for sale. And then after it's all ordered and out there, they then release all the information to the public. And they also have a community that's, I guess, centered around these things. So just because you're not a creator doesn't mean you can't enjoy having a MakerBot, because you can then go on to Thingiverse, which is their online community for people that do design all these things. And you can download just about anything.
And print it off.
Yeah, the only thing that they have to keep under wraps is anything that's copywritten. Like, you couldn't do an exact replica of, like, Buzz Lightyear or something like that, because that would infringe on, you know, copyrights for Pixar and Disney and all that kind of stuff.
But where do they stand on, like, broken parts for your electronics? I'm like, you know, if the door to your DVD player is busted, are you able to get
Oh yeah, no, you can totally look that stuff up. That, see that, but that kind of stuff, it's trademarked, but it's not necessarily copyrighted.
Okay.
You know, like the brand Panasonic would be copyrighted.
Well, but you know what, too? Now people just throw out Blu-ray players when something like that breaks, though, now, and they buy a new one because they're so cheap. Mm-hmm. And then that's the reason why the landfills and are filling up with like disposable electronics.
Yeah.
You know, and something like that is very environmentally friendly considering what's going on out there, right?
But well, you take let's flash forward 10 years, you know, you take in your broken part to, let's say, Shoppers, and they have a 3D scanner / printer. You put in your two broken pieces there, it scans them all, and within the software, you could probably just, you know, with touchscreen, put them both back together, printed a new version, take it home, and boom, you're done.
You'd think, you know, that would be great, but I'm sure somebody will come up with some way to, because they're not making enough money on it, so they won't let it happen.
Otherwise, you know, maybe you know, if it is a Panasonic thing and that and part of that broke, maybe, you know, you go there, you log to the Panasonic website, instead of ordering the part, you actually just, they give you the file, you download the part, print it off and go home with that. So.
And their tech support website, you know, like stuff like that for sure.
Yeah. So then, you're getting rid of all your shipping costs and all the carbon footprint of all the,
yeah,
all that stuff and the manufacturing plants and everything else. You just got one terminal somewhere. Yeah.
And then people lose their jobs and they complain there's no jobs. And then China starts losing their economic power because they're not mass producing everything anymore.
Well, that's not the point. You're able to go back home and watch your Lord of the Rings on your new 85,000 inch TV.
Yeah.
First world problems,
I can see my reflection
right
in his eye.
Nice. Yeah. Oh man. So what have you been up to lately, Peyton?
Oh, lately, again, it's the last week dealing with the stuff next door and the other things with the boy and that being sick. But other than that, let's see. I watched a neat little film. I get back to the Muppet thing recently called Being Elmo.
I saw the preview for that. That looks awesome.
It is awesome. It's really, really cool. It's about the guy behind Elmo. What is his name? Kevin Clash.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah, and it was a really neat film because he's, you know, he's this large, you know, large statured man who, you know, as a kid, just loved Muppets, start playing with them, and you know, all of his friends poke fun of them that. And then he happened to be going on a field trip one time, and he called up a guy named Kermit who was working with, you know, Jim Henson and the boys. And, you know, he, through the jigs and the reels, he ends up, you know, working with them. And it's a really, really interesting story because the guy who was originally running Elmo had Elmo being much more of a cavemanish, deeper voice, banging on stuff and everything. And he was not a fan of Elmo at all. And then one day he walked in because Kevin was working on the Sesame Street and sort of threw the puppet to him and said, "You want to give this a try?" He said, "Sure." So he came up with the hook that, you know, Elmo's all about love and he's all about kisses and hugs and stuff. And he came up with the voice and then boom. He's set. So it's a pretty neat story. Anyway, we're checking out. The link is in the show notes there.
Cool. It's pbs.org, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Now, I'm not sure if you can watch it on that. I saw it streaming on another site, but you can you can probably find a copy of it online and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I could probably look it for it. It might be on Netflix, too, because they do a lot of documentaries and stuff like that on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's very funny. The first time that you see Kevin doing the voice for Elmo, especially if they have a video where he's around kids and he's doing the puppet, but you can see him sitting right there. Like it's really bizarre.
Yeah. There's a great scene when there's I guess the first time he got a request for a kid to meet Elmo, he's like, "Yeah, cool. Bring him in." And then he realized it was for Make-A-Wish and it was like the kid's last wish. And, you know, they show him with one of these kids and it's quite touching. Right. But he's totally in character and he doesn't, you know, pay any attention to the fact that, you know, the kid's on his way out sort of thing. But
it's
a good little film.
Cool.
And, on another note away from that, back to the tech stuff. I'm jumping around all over the place here.
That's all right.
Yeah. The last podcast you were talking about, our Christmas wish list and,
right.
Mine was the Cintiq or the Asus 121, which is the Slate laptop thing.
Okay,
So I ended up getting one and then promptly returning it.
disappointed, are you?
It's a good little device for what it does, but I have an older tablet PC here now that's not exactly reliable, but it performs on a higher level than the Asus one, and I was basing my initial purchase off reviews I saw online and people actually using them, and as Joel pointed out, that I didn't notice that one of them, it was actually the video was sped up, so there was a guy who was doing 3D modeling with a program called ZBrush. Okay. And it looked like the program was really responsive, and it was, wow, that's working really well. And then he pointed out that a guy actually had sped the video up. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, oh, all right, that doesn't justify the purpose of purchase.
Have you guys ever watched an iPad or an iPhone commercial? And then it says down the bottom in fine print in the corner, when all the flashy colors and stuff's going on, actual app time or actual transition times vary. Okay. So they've sped it up from you're going from your messenger in iPhone there, the iPhone message, to say another Twitter, and the transition isn't smooth. How sometimes your phone goes, oh, I've been doing too much today, and it takes its time and switches over, and it's not herky jerky, and the little the spoked wheel of doom comes on and nothing happens, you know. So, it's always a disclaimer. You got to be on that eagle eye, and you're going to miss the main parts of the commercial to see, okay, no, this is too good to be true.
Yeah, although, you guys remember, when you first get your iPhone, it's super snappy out of the box, right?
Oh, but
then you start putting stuff on it, and you start having multiple apps open at the same time, and that's when it starts to chug. So, I mean, I imagine that the ones in the commercials are probably completely empty iPads, you know? It's got nothing on it outside of the apps that they're showing off, which are probably all Apple apps. Aside from maybe Flipboard might be on one of those commercials. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's a neat app.
Oh, I like Flipboard a lot.
Which one's Flipboard?
Flipboard is a free reader app. It really shines on the iPad, but on the iPhone, it's basically an RSS reader.
Okay.
So you can subscribe to a bunch of blogs, and for me, it's like comics and my RSS reader, Google Reader. You can sign into different things, and it just puts it in kind of like a very small screen magazine format, and you just flick. You just flick, and the page, the picture folds in half, so it flips like a flipboard, and you can just go from story to story to story. You can go back out, and you can sign. You can cultivate your feed with Twitter and Facebook and other things if you want. I have other ways of consuming that. I actually recently bought Tweetbot. It was $2.99 in the store. It's more than I normally spend in an app, but half the price of a latte, as Jocelyn reminded me. So I was like, okay, time to not be Scrooge and buy this app. And I mean, we've all been talking back and forth about the frustrations with the Twitter app since Twitter renewed things. Dude, best $3 I have spent in a long, long time. Tweetbot on the iPhone is fantastic.
I haven't had any problems with Twitter on the iPhone, but I guess I don't use it like you guys
do. Yeah, you follow what, four people?
I follow 104. Most of them are hockey people, but yeah, I follow 104 people.
But he doesn't really tweet, so he just assumes he's not actually, producing it.
Actually, that is no longer true, Mr. Francis.
Oh, that's right. That's
yes, right. We were all sitting around with myself, my sister, Jocelyn, and Chad's better half, all sitting around the table at Rogue's Roost over the Christmas holiday, and the first tweet from Chad Merlin occurred.
Yes,
I've seen the video. Yeah, it was almost like a bar mitzvah. It was beautiful. Mazel tov.
I haven't seen much from him since, but
yeah. Was it Get Glue? I've got my Get Glue. I tweeted a few times last night for during the hockey game.
No, good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Broke Twitter silence has been broken.
Yes.
Now I have to write that into the comic.
Immortalized again.
So Chad, what about you? What have you been consuming over the last little while?
Well, my wife and I watched the Star Wars Blu-ray saga. We've mentioned that already. Finally got a chance to watch the one Mike and Molly, but not really consuming much digitally other than just what I'm reading, which we might get to later on in the show. Twitter, man, I like to just see where Twitter takes me sometimes with a lot of the mostly hockey, I got to admit, with the hockey stuff. So that's where I like to go.
Cool.
pretty much. But that's all I've been doing. I mean, like you said, you posted on Twitter about the Lord of the Rings, and right there, I think I had to never put the phone down. I just went, well, right into Amazon. Let's do this. So I ordered it right off the phone. I didn't even go to the computer. So
the internet is a horrible enabler, is it not?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Which takes me back to when you say I'm looking at the PBS.org, and it makes me think of Frontline, which is an amazing show if you get to watch it on an interesting topic. The credit card, what Walmart has done to the Walmart Effect episode. I watched one on crystal meth, on how that destroys people. And it is so informative. It's almost like if I had done half my courses in high school as a Frontline episode, I probably would have been an honor student. It's unbelievable how if I want to learn something, and the way they presented it to me, buddy, with the perfect voice for it and stuff like that. So with the internet as an enabler, plus the credit card, and if you know how the credit card worked and where that came about and stuff, oh man, I can totally see that. You know, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's when I purchased The Lord of the Rings, I saw the little ad on Amazon. Would you like to sign up for one-click purchase? In other words, you don't have to enter in your credit card information. You don't have to make a conscious purchase, you know, when you want something on Amazon. And I said no.
You said yes. Yeah. No. I said yes with my ebooks for the Kindle reader.
Okay, well, yeah, that I can see.
Yeah, yeah, that I did say yes for that, but okay. You're right, man. No, and I don't surf Amazon when I'm bored, kind of thing. So,
I've actually purchased a couple of books there and on Amazon over Christmas as well, and I find, you know, I'm shopping online. I used to be pretty afraid of it, but now it's, you know, it's no big deal anymore. You know, it's a lot more secure than it used to be. And
When you have a big company like Amazon, like they have secure servers. I mean, same thing with Apple, and any really large company is going to have a secure way of looking after you.
Although they did do something that, again, from Twitter, Faith Aaron Hicks posted a thing on Twitter a little while ago about how Amazon, I'm not sure if it was in the States or just in Canada, but they were promoting that if you were to go into your mom-and-pop bookstore and you were to see a book that you wanted there and you use their app to take a picture with your iPhone, then what you could do, like do the barcode thing or whatever, you could buy it from Amazon and it'll give you $5 off for going to them. So basically it's, you know, straight away trying to help the kill, you know, smaller businesses.
I don't know if it was $5. It might've been 5% or something like that, but
in any event, it was something that would help to encourage people to.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was, and and Amazon took a lot of flack for that. They really did. I remember that story on TNT before the Christmas break, and they took a lot of crap for that. But
yeah, the books that I purchased, I couldn't find locally, and I also bought like a little tiny keyboard because I was looking for a mini keyboard to go with my little tablet PC there that I could use on the side. But I want one that was wired, not one that was Bluetooth, because, you know, I don't be worrying about the batteries and all that stuff. I don't care if it's wired or not, if it's wireless. So I found one online. So I ended up ordering it from Amazon. Other than that, though, you know, try to buy local when I can. So
yeah. Cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break here so I can do a double check file save. And we will be right back after these important messages. And we're back. And before we get sidetracked again, I'm just going to throw us straight into what we've been reading. So, meeny, meeny, miny, mo, Chad, what have you been up to in the realm of books?
In the realm of books, I just finished the final book of the Song of Ice and Fire, Fire and Ice.
Fire.
Yeah, Game of Thrones series there, Dance with Dragons. It was pretty good. It was really linked to the fifth book, and fourth. So the one previous to it, they took place. They were the similar timeline, and the main characters were interlaced. And because at the beginning of Dance with Dragons, it took place before the end of the previous book. So it was a little confusing at the very beginning. It got going, slowed down like all of them, and then picked up towards the end. And, you know, and then there's another main character. You're going, oh, my God. So, yeah, it wasn't too bad. After that, though, I went in and finally got a chance to pick up Death of Kings, which is by one of my favorite authors, Bernard Cornwell. He writes the Sharp series, and this new one, the Death of Kings, is part of the Saxon Chronicles, I guess they call them. I think Saxon stories.
Yeah, I think that's what you called them last time, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure I've talked about this a few times during this same podcast, but I mean, it's just the hero, and he goes in, and he's pretty rough, gruff, goes through and kicks some butt, and, you know, kind of similar outcomes towards the end of each one, but it's fun to carry on with the story, right? And actually, there's a link that we'll post in the show notes to Bernard Cornwell's website of the actual book. And George R. R. Martin did an interview with I think it was Amazon did an interview with him and George R. R. Martin. So there's always a link. And, you know, those guys are definitely similar stories. The great thing about Bernard Cornwell, though, is there's very little politics involved. It's just about the characters aren't very complicated. He lays them out pretty easy and pretty well straightforward right from the beginning, and you go from there. So
from what you've told me before off air is that they're more about executing the story than talking about executing the story.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think I tried to start. Was there one about Merlin? Is that one that you tried to get me to read years ago?
Yeah, it was the, what was that series called?
Oh, so it's a different series.
Yeah, the Arthur books.
Right.
Yeah, it was the Arthur books. And
yeah,
they,
couldn't get into those.
No, you know what? There's a time and a place and like everything. And that one was involved Arthur, but it wasn't magical. It wasn't magical at all. It was very...
it's all trickery and alchemy.
Yeah, and that's who Merlin was. And you know, he's just smarter than people, and he understood how nature worked, and he knew what to do with stuff. And Morgan, and you know, and then who, and really, ultimately, Arthur was like apparently the bastard son of the king of England, or the king of that part of England at the time. I mean, it obviously wasn't called England then, and it was about the Saxons invaded and pushed the Britons out because Arthur was a Briton. And the Saxons invaded and started pushing the Britons out, into, you know, just chronicled how Arthur was a noble guy, and he wanted things to be right, and he wasn't prepared to do the things that, you know, would have taken to save it, because he didn't feel it was right. So, you know, Bernard Cornwell, his main characters are very similar. All of his main characters are very similar. So you take it with a grain of salt. You know, if you're looking for just a good, easy read, pick it up and get right into a good adventure story, then I recommend all his books. And I'm sure I've said this every time, but yeah, it's good. Yeah, that's what I've been reading.
Cool. I'm going to throw it to you, Peyton. What's been on your desk lately?
Oh, it's just, again, the book that I bought from Amazon there. It's called Creating Animated Cartoons with Character by Joe Murray.
Oh, nice. And I've always wanted to read that.
Yeah, he's the creator of the Rocko's Modern Life and Camp Lazlo. So it's all about developing and producing your own TV series for the web and all that stuff, and short films and whatnot. But it's just it's a really neat book, and it's got some I'm just probably about a quarter of the way through it at this point, but... yeah, it's got lots of nice little tips and stuff, and, you know, just not a testimony would be the right word, but, you know, reality checks people who've done what he does. And, you know, some of the chapters would include things like, you know, how, now that you got it pitched on and it's been accepted, how do you get through the process of losing your soul and maintaining your vision and that sort of thing, right?
So yeah, well, he's the guy behind Kaboing TV.
Yes, that's the other impetus for wanting to get this, because, you know, he really does seem to have a good head on his shoulders for doing it on his own terms and maintaining his own vision for, you know, start to finish for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So, like it was funny because one of the Rocko's Modern Life, there's a character there, I can't remember what her name is, but he wants someone who has, you know, had a hook, right? You know, try to make a little edgy, a little more... He wanted a female character in Rocko's Modern Life, so they wanted a woman there who had a bit of hook, to it. And so they gave this girl an actual hook for a hand. Later on, she marries one of the other characters, but, you know, say, okay, we'll do that. And just, it's kind of funny. She's got this big, massive meat hook. And visually, it's kind of funny, but, you know, it's the idea of, you know, back during the Ren and Stimpy sort of heyday of Nickelodeon with character-driven, character-produced, creator-owned properties and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the suits and everybody getting into the animation for the money now and not actually knowing how to animate. Well, there's a really funny article, John Kay's latest post on his blog. He talks about, you know, whatever happened to people doing actual jobs, because he said, you know, he's had a bunch of people invite him to LinkedIn, and he's gone to that site and checked it out, and he's been on it for 4 or 5 years. He hasn't gotten any jobs from it. The only jobs he's gotten are for people he actually knows and knows his work. But he's gone through and read some of the job descriptions, and he's like, these people don't actually do anything, right?
What?
No, it's just like, you know, all the mumbo jumbo for people who, you know,
creative liaison between, you know, partner, that partner, exactly. And, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you get into
capitalist mentality.
Yeah, the producer's sub-producer and the executive producer's producer and all that kind of crap. Yeah, no, these days, if anybody has a really decent idea for an animated show or a comic or anything like that, I'm surprised that they would even try to get into papers or television. I would imagine most young people would be beelining it for YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, get it done, have it. I mean, YouTube allows 15 minutes. That's longer than a SpongeBob SquarePants cartoon. Like, those are 11 minutes apiece, you know?
Wow.
So you could put episodes of whatever you want up on YouTube. I just personally signed up my account for advertising on YouTube. Mm. I was talking to Brian Dunaway from Comics Coast to Coast, the other show that I'm on, and he told me about the Amazon affiliate stuff, and he told me about, you know, reminded me about YouTube. So I'm hoping in 2012 to put more content up on YouTube and see if I can't generate some views and maybe generate some income and stuff like that. I mean, it's not going to be a lot. I mean, it's going to be like my Google ads on my site, but I mean, every little bit counts, right? So it's there, it's available to me. It's a good motivation to produce some fun content for YouTube.
You could also take some of the stuff from your Ustream channel and repost that on YouTube, couldn't you?
I could, but I don't record to Ustream anymore. What I do is I record to my hard disk. So when I'm streaming, I use Flash Media Encoder, and I send out the stream to Ustream in 480, I think, so DVD quality. But I record in 720 to my hard drive.
And, right on.
Yeah, I've been posting those to my external with the idea to eventually go back and speed them up to like 800% and do like a time-lapse video of me inking my comics. But I just, one, it's, you know, it takes time to go and edit a video and all that kind of stuff, which I do enjoy doing. I just have to try to find the time to, you know, do it when I'm not, you know, when I shouldn't be sleeping or working or eating or doing something else, you know, essential. Yeah. Oh man. So I'm is it a good book? Like, are you enjoying it? Because I really want to, it's on my list of things to pick up.
Oh, you can borrow it after I'm done, but yeah.
No, that was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. And no, for sure. It's I am enjoying it. You know, it's not it doesn't strike me as being a real hard read so far. And, you know, just right now I'm getting into his influences and all that stuff, but, I've already given a pick through for the most part, and it's good. It's got things about, you know, creating a solid production Bible and a solid pitch and, you know, all things that are worth considering and some missteps and whatnot. So, yeah, it's good.
Cool.
Yeah. I would recommend it for anyone who's interested in trying to do, you know, something a little more on their own. So, and I think a lot of the material here could also apply towards, you know, if you were looking to make a property for children's books or something like that, it could also apply to that. Mm-hmm. And again, you could tailor the book to what you need. As you said, you know, if you're not interested in making a pitch for a TV show, you can skip the chapters and do something and read the other ones. So it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, speaking of borrowing books from you, I actually, I read Superman Red Sun finally over the Christmas break. I've had it for a while. For anybody listening, it's Peyton's copy. And the whole premise, for anybody that's wondering, is it's what would happen if Superman crashed in Russia as opposed to Kansas.
So
Red Sun has a double meaning. And he's still a good guy. Like, he's still fighting for truth and justice. And the only thing, instead of being a flag-waving American, he's a flag-waving Russian.
Oh, jeez.
And it's really interesting because Lex Luthor is, like, the anti-communist hero of America. And he's, through what he thinks is good, ends up being kind of like still a super genius and kind of an all-around annoying, foil for Superman. But it's got a different twist to it, and mm-hmm. I liked it for the most part. The art was great. It's a really interesting story because is it a period piece? It's a period piece, isn't it? It's set kind of
height of the Cold War, Kennedy, yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
That kind of stuff. That's what
60s,
I thought.
Sixties.
So it's got that kind of a style to it. So the art really jives, and there's this. Superman has a brother. And he's very jealous of Superman, and he was raised by Stalin's son, is it?
Yeah, he's basically when he crash lands, like, it becomes a war of the state, and then Stalin raises him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's really interesting, and everybody's trying to groom Superman to be the next leader of the country, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with it because he still sees like his potential to do the world a greater good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, it ends up being a twist. Like, there's a really neat twist with the way that the story of Superman and how they kind of, it's a complete offshoot, but they still kind of wrap it back around. I don't want to give it away in case anybody wants to read it, because it is good. It's just a one-off. Yeah. It's just a one graphic novel. It's totally
worth it. Came out in 2004, so you could probably find it at a local library, if not, and on local, you can get it at Strange Adventures or any of the other comic shops. So
yeah, exactly. So I would highly recommend that. The only thing that I didn't like about it was Lex Luthor. The idea behind him was fine. It was the dialogue that they wrote from him, and it reminded me of like the really campy 80s dialogue for comics, and it just it didn't fit in the book because everything else was great. Like, I mean, Superman didn't sound like he was from the 60s. It sounded normal, but for whatever reason, like whenever Lex Luthor, who was married to Lois Lane, it's no big secret. You find out in like the first four pages.
Yeah.
But he's like, "Well, excuse me, Lois, I'm playing four chess games simultaneously with these three people who are super geniuses, and I'm just about to beat four of them." And blah blah blah. And it's like, "What? Why are you talking like this?" Like, it felt really.
Yeah. Show it. Don't say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. That's the kind of thing. It. He could easily be doing it visually in the comic. He doesn't have to be talking about it. He just basically monologues the whole time, which makes him sound less intelligent than he's supposed to be, and that's what I couldn't. Yeah. I couldn't really buy into him as a believable foil for Superman because he just sounds like a putz the whole time.
Yeah. So,
beyond that, I mean, it was still an enjoyable read because I'm a big Superman fan, and it was really imaginative the way that they handled it. So.
Yes, especially the last 10 pages or so. Mm-hmm. If you do happen to pick it up, do not do one of those things. You go to the end of the book. Just read it front to back. Don't peek at the end. Because you might ruin it for yourself.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've been reading is the Zitz Treasury that my sister gave me for Christmas. I always end up getting a comic book of some sort for Christmas, which is very well received because they are my favorite thing. And Zitz is probably my favorite comic strip that's being published right now. And it's drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman. And Jerry Scott draws Baby Blues with another partner, or writes it. I can't remember. I think he draws it. And Jim Borgman is the artist behind Zitz, but the two of them collaborate and write it. And Jim Borgman was a political cartoonist for the Cincinnati Post for years. I think he just retired one or two years ago. So his art has got this great kind of scratchy... it's still very comic strippy, but he does kind of have that... political cartoon quality to it. Like, if any of you guys can imagine how political cartoonists draw cars, they're all window and all pop, and then the little tires and stuff like that.
That's just enough to get the character in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The little clown cars, that's how he draws all this kind of stuff in this strip. And because it's the most recent book, called My Bad, it has some really fun texting and social media jokes, things about Facebook. There's one strip that I found really poignant, especially because, we're all older than Jeremy in the strip. He's like 15 or 16, his parents are just that distant, from him that they don't get modern technology and stuff like that. Yeah. So Jeremy is on some, you know, IM client constantly texting his friends. And it just says whatever the name of that client is. They made something up for the comic. And then his mom is in bed with a book. And above her head, it says Facebook. And then his dad has got a beer and is in a lawn chair out on the back deck looking at the stars. And above him, it says MySpace. And it's a little bit of an inside joke in the comic too, because Jeremy is super hip, his mom is okay, and his dad is like lame,
lost.
He's lost, completely lost. So the whole, like, you know, Twitter, Facebook, MySpace also kind of has that connotation of, like, you know, hip, not too bad, and then like complete history. You know,
but to be fair, Jeremy's father is friends with Gingivitis, the band. So,
yes, yeah. That's true.
Because so he does have a little bit of street cred.
Yeah, exactly. And the joke there, of course, is that he's an orthodontist.
Oh, right.
And Jeremy's a huge fan of this band called Gingivitis, and then turns out that the guys from Gingivitis are also orthodontists in the daytime. And they're butting up one day at a concert anyway.
Yeah. And the other thing I've been enjoying is I haven't really dove into its collection in a while, probably since I've been spending so much time drawing my own comics. So I've really been taking the time to look at the art, and it just makes me sick. It's so good, and it's so sketchy. Like, it's not finished at all. Like, it's not super tight. Like, it really reminds me of Scotty Young, Peyton. Yeah. You'll know his stuff. And it just kind of reminds me, like, one of the things that I need to try and do a little bit better is draw faster, and maybe even not change my style, but there are certain things that I could do that don't have to be bang on perfect.
I think, you know, as an artist, I think he has a lot more line mileage under his belt, and is just looser and a little more confident with his lines, right?
Well, there's that too, but I mean, even just little things that I'm looking at in, like, I was kind of getting hard on myself earlier in the year saying, well, I don't draw backgrounds very much because I don't have time, and it just sometimes my strip looks like a talking head or two people sitting at a counter the whole time, because I don't always draw table, chairs, counters, that kind of thing, or like cupboards and backgrounds. Well, neither do the people in Zets. Like, there's a corner of a cupboard, and it's enough for you to say that they're in the kitchen, because Jeremy's mom will have a mixing bowl in her hand, and it's just enough, you know. Like, so I'm not feeling as quite as threatened by having to draw more stuff in the strip. It's like, okay, well, all I have to do is just, you know, put a kettle in somebody's hand, and you're going to think that they're in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, like little things like that might be able to help me out. But the art is just so pretty. So if anybody out there is into comics and comic strips, then it's definitely something that I would.
How long has this strip been going now?
Wow.
Oh, dude, that's a
I think at one point they had like, what was it, 1,000 or 1,500 newspapers were carrying them or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were everywhere.
Yeah,
that's what I used to read it in the local paper in Halifax.
Yeah. Oh, it has to be at least 10 years.
Yeah,
at least, because I remember reading it in high school.
Yep.
Yeah,
because I was working on my break at work, I would read it in the paper.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and for me, it's the best way to describe in the spirit of the strip is they are the closest thing to Calvin and Hobbes that you can read today.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's older, but the way that they illustrate, like, his teenage fantasies are the same way that, you know, Spaceman Spiff and all that other kind of stuff would be illustrated in Calvin and Hobbes. It's very, very cool. Well, I guess that brings us into music, and I've got a bone to pick with this one. because I decided to check out Florence and the Machine, recommended by Chad in our last episode, and so I got an album from them, and I don't like it. It is the most repetitive, annoying thing. They even have like multiple tracks of the same song. Even within a song, it's like the same sample just repeated over and over and over again. And I was like, okay, am I crazy? Because I mean, I didn't sit down and listen. I put it on and I was doing dishes and I was cleaning the apartment. I was paying attention, but I was like, is this song still playing? It's been a half an hour. Like, I don't get this. So I got a second opinion. So I played it for Jocelyn. She was working on some show notes for something, and we were hanging out over the Christmas break, and she was like, this is really repetitive. What is this? It's like, yes, I win.
She's just saying that to be nice to you.
Oh, no, yeah, that's one thing. She doesn't tiptoe around me at all. I'm not worried about that. So both of us, both Jocelyn and I, are putting the screws to you, Mr. Merlin, and defend yourself. Why do you like this repetitive drivel?
Grayskull. Bring it. Admittedly, okay, it does get repetitive. My wife said that very early on. But you know what? If you work a few choice tracks into your mix for whatever you have, your top 25 on iTunes or what have you, your top stars or whatever, you know what? I enjoy it. Because it is, if you take it, it is different. It's different.
Agreed.
Okay, yes. It is different. And you know what? And when I discovered that, I was, you know what, how the top 40 crap that we get subjected to all the time, it's the same thing. You know, look at the pop music. It's the same. The 20-year-old teen, the blonde girl singing a song, it's the same. Okay, now
you sound like her father all of a sudden. That 20-year-old kid with the blonde and the singing. Get off my lawn.
I just have, when you say that, I have visions of Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. Did you guys see that?
I haven't seen that, no.
Oh, my God. It's the ultimate old man movie. The epitome of old man, stereotypical old man. It is. He becomes that in it. But he also kicks some ass in it, too, so it's pretty good.
Nice.
But no, okay, you know, but admittedly, too, I didn't download entire albums. I went through iTunes, and now, thankfully, within, I don't know, last couple months, maybe a little bit longer, the sample length is now a minute 30. So you really get a better judge of a song as opposed to the old 30, 45 seconds, mm-hmm. where you might just end up on the chorus and be like, wow, this is great. Because, well, the chorus is usually mostly the best part of the song. That's why they keep singing it. Mm. So, you know. But to get, I enjoyed probably about 10 songs. And although if I go, hey, I feel like listening to Florence and the Machine right now, and I put on the first song of the 10 songs I downloaded, yeah, it sounds the same, you know. So I'll admit that. But if you can work it around and move it around and maybe, you know, eliminate some of those songs that just don't respond to, then hey, if you don't like that, try the Black Keys, man. Those guys are great.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're well. You took my advice last time. You could try it this time. It's I don't know. It's what you'd hear at a hockey game.
We're keeping
game,
score now, man.
Yeah. They've got a new CD out, and they're the kind of guys that'll talk like, you know, we're like, you know, rock and roll, but we don't sell out. And they really they're making, from what I can tell from everybody, they're doing well, but they're still staying true as much as they can, I guess. Gold on the Ceiling, I think, is one of their newer singles. That's pretty decent. And then going back, I'm sure you would have heard one of their other songs at like a hockey game. Like it's got that hockey game, you know, feel to the to their music. You know, like gets you pumped up. Like,
so they stop yeah, Tom, right? Right
for the, no, okay. They get you ready for the next. Well, for the next play, you know, so like it okay. gets you pumped and yeah, it's fun stuff. Okay. Howlin' for You, that's their older one that you've probably heard before.
Okay,
so yeah,
cool.
So sorry, I hope I didn't lead anybody else astray out there, but maybe I've created brand new fans. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe,
I don't know. If you have, you know how to reach him.
I'm on Twitter and I might tweet you back.
Yeah,
yeah, he'll answer you now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, in the essence of keeping the show moving, we're going to skip right over email because we don't have any. If you want to email the show, it's thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. If you don't. that way we'll just not have to worry about it. And that brings us to the end of the show, where we talk about some fun stuff that we found on the internet. And I guess I can dive in here first with one of my favorite little clips from YouTube, which was the Glove and Boots Christmas Spectacular, Merry Almost Christmas. They put it out quite a few weeks before Christmas.
Is that the one with the two little puppets?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't watch the Christmas one.
No, it's okay. But it's just more of the same. If you've watched any Glove and Boots thing, it's very good. But they basically have they kidnap Santa, and there's all these old callbacks to 80s cartoons.
Yeah.
And the way that Santa he calls on his powers, like Lion-O from Thundercats. So it's like Santa, 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 ho! And I lost my mind. It's such a funny, funny thing. And then all the little elves come in like toy soldiers, and they're all like rappelling from the ceiling. And it's just a really goofy, fun production from Glove and Boots. I mean, I subscribe to them on YouTube, so I will be definitely watching those guys on my Apple TV as they release new videos. The other thing that I caught was Shit Girls Say. And there's all kinds of videos out there that are basically putting words in the mouths of the opposite sex. And it is definitely worth a watch. It's very, very funny stuff. And in some ways, I find some of these YouTube videos that are out there that are funny little memes funnier than some of the things that you see on TV. I mean, like, you have your big funny shows like The Big Bang Theory. And I haven't had a chance to check out the ones that you guys recommended last time. But I do find that I like my funny and small little YouTube segments, like mm-hmm. watching a 5-minute clip from The Daily Show or something like that. Yes. I prefer to do that in small bits rather than sit through like an entire half an hour of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You can get trying, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, well, the little snippets for YouTube stuff, yeah. Sorry, I'm stammering here. The two animated clips that I did last month that I mentioned on the last show.
This hour has 22 minutes.
Yeah. Both those clips are now posted up on my website. So if anybody wants to check those out, a little plug, but anyway.
Oh, for sure.
You know, the little fun snippets. There's also another thing with YouTube would be, have you guys seen the Nerf Dentist Kid thing?
I have not.
There's a little boy who's probably around, 8 years old or whatever. And he's standing with a Nerf compound bow with a string tied to it, and the other string in the string is tied to one of his teeth, and he's going to pull his tooth out with this Nerf arrow. And he looks to his dad, and he says, "Is it going to hurt?" And his dad says, "I don't know. You'll have to tell me." He's like, "Okay," and just pulled trigger. Anyway, it's really, really funny. The kid is badass, man. I was like, I would never do that when I was a kid, right?
I will click on that link right after we're done.
Yeah, it's quite funny. We're checking out. Sorry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. What about you, Chad?
There's always the same thing for me over and over again, but I did stumble across one quick YouTube clip. I don't know where I can't remember where I found it. No doubt it was Twitter, but it's hard to say. But it was there's a girl at a zoo, and there's a lion.
Yes, I saw that today.
Did you? Okay, you saw that today? Okay.
That's awesome.
There's a lion in a zoo, and the girl's on the other side of probably what would probably be 3 or 4 inches of plexiglass. So, there's no way the lion's coming through. But the little girl is having a stare down contest with the lion.
Six inches or a foot away from his face.
It's brilliant. And what's crazy, the mother, whoever, the guardian is at filming this is going, step away from the plexiglass, please. Just step away. Very laid back, very nonchalant. Man, get over there and grab that. Get over here. Stay away from the glass. Because what happens? I'm the king of the jungle. I intimidate people. That's my job. So the lion starts to do that whole sound. And then out of nowhere starts pawing at the screen or at the little girl. She like stands her ground, but she flinches. But if she could only comprehend, if those claws come out and then it starts, she's lunch, man. Like lunch. No, actually, you know what? Play toy, plush play toy. Just that's what I see happening. There's no way. Oh my God. Don't provoke the king of the jungle. King for the reason.
She flinched very, very slightly, but
she blinked. Yeah,
I would have run across the room and I would have pushed some kids I got over.
Staring down now, man. And the only other thing I want to plug is the guys from the Montreal Gazette. It's a newspaper, obviously, in Montreal. And they started out doing the sports reporters that cover the Montreal Canadiens. started out doing their own kind of thing on the side, which was it was originally called HabsInsideOut.com, and it was all things to do with Montreal Canadiens, which happens to be my favorite hockey team. And Peyton will have something to say about that, I'm sure, as we go along here. But they
drink some
they,
water. I almost spilled water when you mentioned them anyway.
Throw up a little in your mouth, right? So, but they mention everything about the Habs. But as you go along, they're not really homers, as what you call a person who just bleeds the colors of your favorite team, but they're in the media. But these guys put a lot of great links to other stuff. And the commentariat, the people that comment on all the posts and stuff down in the blogs, you know, come up with some incredible views. And I mean, most of us are all Montreal Canadiens fans, but there's some really critical fans that know that this team is not doing well right now. And it is so refreshing to get that other side, as opposed to watching TSN where it's Leaf Nation all the time. And they're like, oh, the Leafs are the best team. And, oh, my God, look what they're doing in Toronto. You guys are like 20 goals more scored than Montreal on. Get me started on that. But anyways, they live blog games. they do all things Habs.
Here comes the old man again.
There he is.
Back when I was a boy, the Leafs. The Habs, this. There were the Habs and the Habs not. Yes,
But the other great thing is they have an app. There's an app for that. And it goes to that, and it is just as it's great, just as good as the website. And I live on there for stuff because they're critical. They'll break it down. There's an older journalist in Montreal that the guy's been around. He was his first beat report for a paper was covering the Maurice Richard riots in Montreal in the 50s. Where Maurice Richard kind of punched out a ref and they suspended him for quite a few games, which, you know, in Montreal you don't do because he was about to set a scoring record that year, playoff implications, all this stuff. And it was pretty brutal. And anyway, so this guy's they post his stuff on there a lot too. And it's really great to read. It's really fun.
Cool. Yeah. That feed from Hockey Inside Out is something that you could put into Flipboard if you wanted to. I mean, I know you have the app for it already on your phone, but if you wanted to have that incorporated into an app that also followed Twitter and then also followed a couple things, Flipboard would actually be probably a cool way to consume that kind of media.
Oh, okay. Put it in the RSS. Okay, yeah. Because they post links to, like, for instance, the Montreal Gazette, TSN, the Star, the Toronto Star. They go all over Boston. Like, you know, Montreal and Boston fans are worse than Montreal Leaf fans, right? Like, Montreal can laugh at Toronto because, well, they haven't won it since 67. But then the rivalry is almost dead now. But with Boston, it's so brutal. Like, the nasty stuff that comes out of both sides, it's so fun to read. The guys I follow on Twitter, oh, man, because of this website, it's so much fun. And I'm sure all other sports teams have them, but yeah, it's there's not enough time in the day to consume it all.
Well, that's what I find too. Like, I follow so much stuff on Twitter that I catch it when I catch it, when I've got 5 minutes to check, you know. Like, I don't actually have time to read Twitter. I use it as a broadcast tool more than I do something to catch new material. I do have a couple of short lists that I follow. Like, I keep a list on TweetDeck of all the comic people that I follow. So I do tend to see comic news as it goes by, but larger, you know, scoping topics. I even miss, like, news. People are like, hey, did you hear about the earthquake in Indonesia? No. When did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, 2 days ago. Don't you read Twitter? It's like, well, I'm on Twitter. how often I actually read it are two different things. I mean, if it didn't happen on a podcast, I probably didn't catch it.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Did you listen to the podcast about that one?
Well, it depends. Well, I see, a lot of the stuff that I listen to is tech shows, so it doesn't. It doesn't always permeate. I mean, it does if I'm listening to live stuff, like, if because you hear the people talking about general news between the shows, and that's when you tend to find that kind of stuff. So, I guess that'll bring us neatly to the end of our epic episode of 2012. This is our longest yet. I think fun was had by all. One thing that we'd like to announce is that we're going to go weekly. We were experimenting in 2011 with doing this once a month, and we all agree that it's so much fun we want to do it once a week. So right now, our regular recording time is 8:30 Atlantic time on Wednesday. I'm going to try to put together a live feed, and I'm still working out the kinks on that kind of thing because my podcasting partner in crime on the Alpha Greek Radio Friday morning show is in CES right now with some of his buddies, so he is unavailable. So if you'd like to contribute to the show, you can write us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Send us a topic you'd like us to talk about, send us a movie or show or book recommendation. Feel free to send your comments, suggestions, questions, whatever the heck you want to talk about. Just let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can stop by the blog at The Citadel Cafe for show notes. And incidentally, these show notes are now being brought to you by my girlfriend Jocelyn. She has
for who?
My girlfriend Jocelyn.
Oh, did he say girlfriend?
I said girlfriend.
I think he said girlfriend.
Yeah.
I should scream at my wife right now about that.
You guys can do this all you want. All you're doing is making her smile right now. So it's great. She is going to be taking over the show notes, which is a nice kind of chunk of time off my plate.
Thank you, Jocelyn.
Yes, we really appreciate this. And she is also a podcaster. You can listen to her and her co-host Ryan on the Gamers In podcast. And that's thegamersinpodcast.com. I hope I got that right. She will correct me in the show notes if I didn't. You can also follow the show on Twitter. It's The Citadel Cafe. You can follow us on Facebook. We don't have an actual domain name yet, but you can just look us up by name. Same thing on Google Plus. It's The Citadel Cafe across all places. And last but not least, you want to check us out on iTunes. One of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners is via the reviews in the iTunes store. If you'd like the show, give us a rating, leave us a review, and we might share your thoughts on the next episode. Just like these folks, Nigel Fett gives us a 5-star rating. This is Boba Fetish from the Frog Pants community. He also recently hired me to do his cartoon avatar, which was a lot of fun.
His avatar on Twitter is awesome.
Thank you.
Well done, sir.
I appreciate that. He really enjoys it as well. And so Nigel said, excellent show. Nice to listen to other folks talk about the things that I'm actually interested in, TV, comics, and tech. Keep up the great work for what I hope is many years. Well, thanks very much, Nigel. That's very kind of you to say. And the other review we have is from GIS Gamer. This is also Jocelyn, by the way. So it's a little bit biased, but whatever. She says she loves the podcast. Joel, Peyton, and Chad are great to listen to and talk about the stuff that I'm into. We need more gaming content, though. She's a big gamer, and apparently we don't talk about games enough. She is, of course, kidding. She says, great job. We'll keep listening as long as you keep recording. Right. So, yay. Thanks for the podcast ratings on iTunes. So send more of those in, guys. The more that we get, the better. So I have been Joel Duggan since the day I was born. And I draw a comic at starcrossedonline.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
Cardboardtreehouse.com, as well as Twitter with Peyton Francis. And I'm also on the Google Plus and the Facebook and stuff and the things and the things. Yeah.
And Mr. Merlin, where can people find you?
Twitter. It's fine. I'm tweeting now, so I'm interacting. At Chad Merlin. I might even respond to you if you tweet me.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. You have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, and we are out of here.